history. This has been Black History Month 365. BAM 365, where you find every day Black history is made.
Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Hey, thank you so much, Don.
Hello, hello. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Mandy. How was your weekend?
It was wonderful. It was fantastic. Yeah. All last week was
like
great.
The whole Thanksgiving week. Experience.
Yes.
The kids enjoy the turkey.
It was fun. We were in Lake Charles visiting my parents.
Lake Charles, got to see my family. Louisiana.
And then we went to the deer lease, and I roughed it in the woods for 3 days.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Well, I thought you said you had fun. I mean, deer lease doesn't sound
fun.
Like fun to me.
It's
so tell
fun.
Me about, so you're Lake Charles. This is like Cajun country.
Mm-hmm.
So what is a Cajun Christmas like for you? I mean, what sort of food did you guys have? Did you have like a
Cajun Thanksgiving?
Like a boudin. What did I say?
Cajun Christmas.
No, I mean Cajun Thanksgiving. Yeah, did you have like a boudin stuffing or turducken or, you know, what did
no,
you
No, it was
have?
Pretty just normal tradition. There were boudin balls. Absolutely,
boudin balls?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we had dirty rice.
Yeah.
So rice dressing, yeah. And then the cornbread dressing.
Yes.
And then everything else was pretty traditional.
Yeah. Did you have the little sweet potatoes with marshmallows on top?
No, we had the sweet potato casserole that I made, but no marshmallows belong in the sweet potato casserole.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
We could probably do a thumbs up, thumbs down on marshmallows.
Marshmallows in the sweet potato casserole?
Yeah,
thumbs down.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of those, but I do love a lot of brown sugar in the sweet potato casserole.
Yes, with pecans on top. So delicious.
Oh, pecans. See, that's nice. That's a nice little touch.
Brown
right?
sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how many sticks of butter is in there? And it's like 2 pounds of brown sugar.
Never enough in terms of sticks of butter. That's probably the right answer.
It was good. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was very good. We had my daughter, who's a comedian in New York, as you know. She was back in town and
had some good laughs.
We did. She's a laugh a minute. So it's always fun for her to practice on us. So, but we had a great Thanksgiving. And what wonderful weather, right?
It was very wonderful. I don't know. I actually woke up one morning and it was 30 degrees and I had no heat. So I felt it.
This is when
you're
out and your deer.
Something happened to the heat.
Deer lease.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, very good. Hey, so a good show today, though, I think,
That's
Mandy,
gonna
right?
It's going to be great, yes.
So we're going to start off today with the Children at Risk Policy Analyst, Gretchen Himsel. Sharpen your pencil for Gretchen Himsel. And she's going to tell us the significance of the number 24.
Oh, that's a good number.
Number 24.
There we go.
What
does it mean?
Is that your
Don't
age?
Do it.
That's your age.
And after Datahead, we'll be talking to Jenna Cooper from United Against Human Trafficking, and she's going to be talking about her work to end human trafficking and how people can join the fight.
Jenna used to be an intern at Children at Risk, sort of part of our fight against trafficking.
She was, yes.
We're going to talk with Cheryl Hensley. Cheryl is the co-creator of Present Time Kids, and we're talking about mindfulness and how it can increase a child's ability to learn. And so this is sort
of
important. This is like a little trendy, right? This whole idea of mindfulness. And so I'm really excited to talk to Cheryl about this idea. Are you pretty mindful? Are you in the moment, Mandy?
I try to be.
You try to be, yeah.
Am I always? No. Most of the time.
Well, we're never
not.
Trendy. The thing is, we're not too trendy, right? So we need
but
to.
But it's good. It's something that we want our children to learn.
To be
and
more mindful.
Grow up. Yes.
To be in the moment.
That's right. And today on our social conscience scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion, thumbs up or thumbs down, Alexa as a surrogate parent.
Alexa.
Alexa.
Can you take care of my kids for me?
Alexa. Turn on the lights.
Alexa, read this story while I go outside and have a wine.
Alexa, that's bad. Alexa, make me a grilled cheese.
Yeah,
no, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. But do kids know the difference?
I wonder,
that's
right? So that was the big subject at our staff meeting today, right? This whole idea of Alexa as a surrogate parent, right?
Yeah.
Because I guess kids are getting used to this whole idea of Alexa.
Some are. We'll have to see.
Our final guest today will be our good buddy, Scott Van Beck. Dr. Van Beck is with the Houston A+ Challenge, and he, And he always loves to share his thoughts, rightfully or wrongfully, right? Sometimes they're horribly wrong thoughts on public education in Houston. So we're going to have him on the program. He'll be talking a little bit about his thoughts. Did you know that Dr. Van Beck, he's leaving his position at
Vermont.
Houston Ed Plus. He's moving
going
to Vermont.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I don't know if that's public knowledge, but now it is.
Now it is. So actually, I heard he retired on stage somewhere at some event.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
One of our events, probably, right? I probably mentioned it. Yeah.
We're going to have a fantastic show today.
Yes, Mandy. I think it's going to be good. With me, as always, is the marvelous Mandy Kimball from Children at Risk. And welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio. This is a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. And how do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of every single one of our children? And Mandy, you are very good, though, at taking care of every single one of our kids. This morning, you and I were at a meeting, and it was the Houston Harvey Hurricane, the Children's
Collaborative.
Recovery Collaborative. And we were talking about the impact that this hurricane is still having on our town, right?
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing that... we're hearing from people talking about housing, you know, 540,000 applications for FEMA for new housing or housing help. 300 of those just inside Houston, 300,000 of those just inside Houston city limits. We're talking about mental health in the schools, how schools are still feeling that there's not enough. I mean, there's still a lot of problems going on.
There's a lot of problems still going on. And yet it is so easy, if it's not right in front of you, to carry on like nothing happened, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's really important for Houston to stay together and stick together. And we are, right?
Yeah.
To make sure that all of ours, right? All of our kids and families can get through this.
I thought it was very interesting when we were talking to Leslie Bourne, who runs the Covenant House here in town. This is where runaway and throwaway and homeless children go. And she talked about how their numbers impacted by the storm of homeless children have increased. These are homeless youth. And because things at home, problems that were already happening at home have been exacerbated by the storm. And so we're seeing more kids on the street because of this. I mean, these are things that aren't really covered in the news.
That's right.
And I think it'd be good. And I think you brought this up, this whole idea. Let's every week, let's continue to focus on our children of the storm. Because
and there are some fantastic people out there working hard and taking care of children and families. And it'd be great to have them on the show and hear what's going on.
Yeah, I think so. You ready for a date ahead?
Well, you know it.
You're very good. On the line with us is Gretchen Hemsel. Sharpen your pencil for Gretchen Hemsel. And Gretchen, what is our number today?
Hi, Dr. Bob. Hi, Mandy. Our number today is 24%.
24%. Wow. A quarter.
Yeah.
24% is the student mobility rate at Reagan High School in Austin, Texas, as found in the Children at Risk TexasSchoolGuide.org. The mobility rate is the degree to which students leave school for whatever reason, maybe join mid-year, so it's the transiency number of the school. And 24% is high, but what's significant about this is that in 2010, the mobility rate was 41%.
Oh, wow. So that's cut in half. That is high, 41%. And you know what? This is struggling, Bob. You and I have had several conversations with different superintendents, and it is a challenge for them to educate these kids when they come and go. Maybe they've made some progress and then they're just gone, or they've been jumping around from school district to school district and they enter their school and are so far behind from really from their mobility. It's extremely challenging. So how did it drop so much?
Yeah, because Gretchen, to me, this is interesting, right? It seems like when schools are able to lower that mobility rate, and they have to be intentional in the way that they do that, but what happened here that they got this rate from 41% down to 24%?
Well, what they used here is a community schools program, and that's one of the popular topics that's being discussed in the education space lately. But this is an example where it was very skillfully and effectively implemented. So a community schools program really brings the planning of the school to the community level. It's a shared leadership with the principal, and they bring in wraparound services for the students, but not just for the students, for the families. So in many situations, the housing situation is what causes student mobility. So, for example, if families are jumping from apartment to apartment to get that first month rent-free because they're trying to make ends meet, that might move them out of the zone for that school, and so the kids are bouncing from school to school because their parents have unstable housing, which we're seeing a lot now with the Harvey recovery. So the wraparound services has counselors and nonprofit organizations, public-private partnerships, to work with those families to get housing stabilized, to get food stabilized, to perhaps work on ESL programs. The schools are open at night for parents if they want to do some ESL or for tutoring for the students, and then also on weekends. And what's key to the success is that the community was very involved in this. It wasn't someone else coming saying, this is what we think you need. It was the community deciding together, this is what we would like in our schools. And within five or six years, the academic successes improved. They had lower attrition rates. They had higher graduation rates and improved scores in math and reading. So an effective community schools model really is useful.
Community schools is a great program. And I, back in the day, used to volunteer with them. And what they bring to the table, I did. But what they bring to the table is wonderful. I mean, it can go from clothing to mentoring, counseling, tutoring, just like Gretchen was saying.
It's like a wraparound.
It's wraparound. That's right. But what sounds, and there's a lot of community in schools. Right? Mm-hmm. Programs in schools and school districts across the state. But Gretchen, what sounds interesting to me or key is that the community really gravitated to it and it really kind of expanded the program or latched onto it. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Absolutely. Because if this high school was being threatened to be closed by TEA because they had several years of failing performance. In 2010, they had an enrollment of 600 students with the mobility rate of 41%, like we talked, and a low attendance rate of 88%. So with community organizers, they worked with the families there, said, what do you want in a school? What do you need in a school? What do you need in a community? And how can we make that happen? And then, 7 years later, now enrollment is up to 1,300. There's student mobility rate is down to 24%, and their graduation rate has increased as well. So it really, the key to this success is not just the community in schools program, but the community, like the capital C community of the families that live there.
This is interesting because we were always talking about family engagement, community engagement.
Yep.
How can we maximize resources, utilize those public-private partnerships? And what we're seeing, and it is fantastic to the school in Austin, but Houston has some of these issues, right? I mean, there are schools that are they're threatening to close. And the reality is, I think because of new laws and with the Texas Education Agency Commissioner, we're going to see more of it. And so we shouldn't wait until someone comes and say, hey, we're going to shut down your school if it doesn't improve. But wouldn't it be great if that was the norm for all of these vulnerable populations?
And one of the things, Gretchen, that we see oftentimes, though, with communities when a school is threatening to shut down is that the community, again, with the capital C, gets defensive. And it's like, don't shut us down. This is our school. This is our community. But they aren't necessarily being proactive in terms of, well, what are the things that could make this school better? What are the things that we could change to really improve outcomes? And that seems to be the difference here at Reagan High School in Austin.
That's right. And what I've been seeing also is that it's often cases the alumni of a school, and for example, the schools I'm thinking of are in Houston, it's the alumni that are very excited about keeping this school, but it's the families that are there now that are less proactive. And I think the key there is the shared leadership, because unless the principals of the school and of the HISD are willing to cede some of that decision-making authority to the community, it's just going to be top-down, and the people are not going to feel like they're being listened to, and then they won't engage. So until they feel empowered and part of the process, part of that leadership, they won't embrace it like they did in Austin.
Very good. Gretchen Hemsel is a policy analyst at Children at Risk. Her specialty is public education. Thank you, Gretchen, very much for all that you do, and thanks for being on the program.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye. Take care.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT, Pacifica Radio. You're with Mandy and Dr. Bob. And you ready to talk to a little bit of Jenna Cooper?
I love talking to Jenna Cooper.
Very good. Very good. Jenna, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you two?
Very good. We have a little theme music for Jenna. Did you pick this, Jenna?
I did not, but I'm into it.
Yeah, right?
So am I. Yeah, that sounds good. What is it?
So, Don, did you pick it?
No. Hey, y'all just give me a CD. I don't know what this is.
So Jenna Cooper is with United Against Human Trafficking and a longtime friend of ours. Jenna, when we look at the scope of human trafficking in our city, are things getting better? Are we becoming more aware? Are things getting worse? Where do we stand?
I like to be optimistic and think that the city as a whole is becoming more aware. You know, I've been with United Against Human Trafficking for 2 years, and when I go out and do presentations, I always ask the question, okay, so who has heard about human trafficking, and what do you know? And over the last 2 years, more and more hands go up in the beginning, so I like to think that, you know, this is on people's radar. I do think we still have a lot of work to do, and a lot more people need to be educated on just, like, the misconceptions. You know, I think we have a general sense of human trafficking as it pertains to sex trafficking, but I think we can do a lot, a better job, and just more attention put on the labor trafficking side.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? It seems like when people know about human trafficking, they know about sex trafficking,
mm-hmm.
But they very rarely do people talk about labor trafficking.
Or think that it's here.
Or even think
Texas.
That it's here.
Absolutely. You know, they think it's just happening in other countries, and, you know, after Harvey hit, you know, the people that are targeted are those migrant workers, those day laborers. So it's really important for people to understand that this is happening in our city. You know, there was that study that came out of UT Austin, when was it, like last year?
Yep.
That really looked at the landscape of human trafficking in Texas. And what they found is that 234,000 individuals are in a labor trafficking situation, where 79,000 are in a sex trafficking. So it really just showcases, like, we need to put attention on the labor side.
And for us, of course, children are much more likely to end up in sex trafficking, but they can end up in labor trafficking, can't they?
Absolutely. You know, we have one of the most vulnerable youth populations is homeless, runaway, and throwaway youth, and we do see that some of them are actually being forced into labor situations.
So talk about labor trafficking, because I know oftentimes some of the conversations are like, oh, the people who are selling magazines. But what are the situations that are most common here in Houston and Texas? Farming, we know that there's lot of farms in Houston.
But right? I'm interested in children labor trafficking. What are some of the things that people could see around Houston, Jenna?
Well, we do have those traveling sales crews, as Mandy mentioned. You know, we've had a few cases here in the Houston area where youth are recruited for summer jobs, and traffickers are really great at putting out these really, really nice-sounding, almost too perfect jobs out in social media and wherever the youth are, and then they get hooked into a situation that they never thought they would get into. So we do see the traveling sales crew. There was a study that came out and looked at homeless youth and young adults, and they actually saw a lot of survival behaviors and survival drug dealing. Some are actually being classified as human trafficking. We also see construction. You know, we don't see maybe that many youth and children in the construction, but after Harvey, that's who's being recruited to help rebuild our city.
I sometimes get these young kids who come to try to sell magazines, and I see that they're part of a crew. How should I be reacting? You know, I sometimes will talk to them about how they need to get out of this, But is there, I mean, should I be calling someone? Is there something that, because this is probably the way that we probably see youth engaged in labor trafficking more than any other way, right, is these magazine
absolutely,
crews.
Yeah.
Is there something we should be doing, Jenna?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's definitely red flags and signs that you can look for. The best thing that you could do is just start engaging in a conversation, see how they're responding, and then you can call the National Human Trafficking Hotline. This hotline is operated 24/7. You can call if you have questions about human trafficking or if you need to report a credible tip. So that number is 888-3737-888. They have services in a variety of languages, and so they're a really, really great resource because you can call them. They know exactly who in that area is working on the issue of human trafficking, so they'll connect with law enforcement or service providers and really be able to support that situation.
So do you try to get the license plate number of the cars that they're in or something?
Is absolutely. You can take as much information as you can. You know, what the youth may look like or the person that you're trying to report a credible tip on. If there is a car, get their make and model, license plate, really whatever information you can possibly get would be helpful.
That's hard because I usually don't see a car.
Yeah, I haven't seen it because I think they drop the kids off in the neighborhood, so it's somehow to get that. But it seems to me that would be the – when I think about kids coming, if I could find that the license number, that would be the license plate number, that would be the thing to do.
Yeah, even just like the location. We had a situation back in May right after OTC, so the Offshore Technology Conference, and we were talking with this gentleman at our table because we had a table there. And we were providing him all this information about human trafficking. And then a few days later, he actually called back our office and said, really coincidentally, there was two young people that came to his house right after that tabling event. And he simply just started a conversation with them, just trying to get information, like what school they were coming from, because they had originally said that they were trying to sell candy to bring back to their school sports team. So he was just, you know, being super friendly, like, what sports do you play, like, what school do you go to, and they started to get flustered, and then they said, oh, we're actually from Dallas. So his wife was actually from Dallas, so she came to the door and was asking them questions, and they just started to get really, really flustered because usually traffickers provide a script for their victims so that they don't really set off these red flags, and so immediately when he saw that, he called the national hotline. The girls had actually walked away, but they called in such a quick period of time that law enforcement was able to go, and they found the two youths.
Wow. Hey, Jenna, as we wrap up, how do people learn more from you guys at United Against Trafficking, and how do people get more involved with you guys?
Absolutely. So you can visit our website at www.uaht.org or give us a call at our office at 713-874-0290. We're always out in the community trying to outreach to vulnerable populations. We do trainings for both frontline professionals and youth. So we would love for people to call so that they can get educated. We also have a volunteer program and always, always welcome more people to get involved.
Wow, very good. Do you work with a lot of the volunteers, Jenna?
I do. We have some pretty exceptional volunteers who are absolutely phenomenal and have donated so much of their time to our organization.
That's great.
Very good. Jenna Cooper is the manager of outreach services with United Against Human Trafficking. And Jenna, thank you so much for the work that you do. And thanks for being on Growing Up in America.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Bye. Great to hear your voice. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT, Pacifica Radio. And coming up next, we have Cheryl Hensley. She's the co-creator of Present Time Kids. And hey, Don, you want to do a quick break for traffic and weather, or you want to wait till after Cheryl?
Let's do this.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's take a quick break.
All right, folks. Let's look at our highways and byways. All right, East Sam Houston Tollway southbound before Old Galveston. We have a hazmat spill involving a heavy truck and three other cars. All main lanes are over. Just note, you can't drive through there at all. Southwest Freeway southbound at FM 1092 Murphy and Willcrest. We have another heavy truck stall that's eating up the right shoulder. Also, Southwest Freeway northbound before Belfort Avenue. We have a heavy truck stall, right shoulder. And tell me if you heard this before. East Katy Freeway, westbound at San Jacinto, we have a heavy truck stall in up the right shoulder, right lane, and entrance ramp. So if you see everybody moving to the left, you know why. Folks, today you're feeling a good 72 degrees outside. Later on tonight, you're feeling a low of 57 degrees. And now back with Bob and Mandy in studio.
All right.
It's getting chilly in the evening.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
It is nice.
You get cool like that. You ready for a little Cheryl Hensley?
Yes.
Hi.
Hey, Cheryl. Bob Sanborn here with Mandy Kimball. And Cheryl is the co-creator of Present Time Kids. So, Cheryl, tell us a little bit about Present Time Kids. What's this all about?
So Present Time Kids is a program that we have implemented in Travis Elementary School. It has two big main tenets about neuroplasticity of the brain and mindfulness. The concept of it is that we are empowering children and adults, but we're targeting the children, to be able to recognize that stress happens in them and not to them. And by doing certain simple exercises every day, they can actually change their brain. They can change the way that their nervous system responds to stress.
We all need this.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you explain this to a little kid, Cheryl? Yeah. How do you explain? I mean,
what
you guys must be a simpler way of explaining it. How do you explain mindfulness to a child? What are you saying to a child when you're talking about
that?
So
we go in and we talk about having intention to their attention, and that when they pay attention to something in a particular manner, they can create single-mindedness. We talk about to them about how it's important to focus on one thing at a time than many things at once. We also give them the analogy of, like, if they're using a computer system and if they have a lot of window panes open at the same time, it slows their computer down. So by doing the exercises, they learn how to shut those window panes down and become more focused. And we teach from four-year-olds that they get it to adults.
That's interesting because people pride themselves on multitasking. I do.
They do. And women are such good multitaskers.
Yeah, maybe not men. Bob, do you like to multitask?
No. I think women are great multitaskers.
Yeah, but maybe that's
not very
healthy.
But I'm all about being
healthy.
In the moment and being mindful. So.
But what about kids? So what about being on the computer, doing homework, and having the television on or listening to music? Is that a no-no or is that okay? Some people say they can focus better that way.
Yeah, some kids respond well by having some background music for them or, you know, like wiggling their feet when they're doing work.
Gotcha.
But we try to tell them, like, when you're trying to read something and listen to something and write something and take care of something else, that having your brain scattered like that, the new research shows that it's more detrimental than good. You know, that in the 80s, it was all about multitasking and how many things can you do at once and how much can you divert your attention. And we try to dial that back and explain to them that, you know, there are times in your life that you're going to need to handle more things at once. But if you can give attention to each individual task fully, then you can almost like single stream pay attention to things, like take care of one thing and then another and then another and then another.
You know, Cheryl, I was at Sharpstown High School, and I think it was last year or the year before, and they were doing, every morning they would do a moment of Zen, right, where they would all focus each other, you know, they would focus, and they would do like a little bit of meditation, and it seemed like it was really having a positive impact on the school. But this idea of sort of calming the nervous system and focusing, it seems to be something that kids can get into, right?
Oh, yes. It's actually a revolution in the schools, and a lot of different schools are implementing it. In fact, the University of Houston is just completing a study of present-time kids. They studied the fourth graders and came in and observed them every day. And this, we teach them some simple techniques, and especially in public school, it is every second is accounted for. So they do 5 minutes, and they take, not only do they take, but their teachers take 5 minutes out of their day to really center themselves. Some teachers do it a couple times a day. They do it after recess. They do it in the morning when everyone's getting settled. And the kids, I mean, we've had such positive feedback, and the children come up to us as, you know, as young as, you know, 6 years old and tell us, this is how I used this exercise and this is how I did this. And I used, you know, I used what you taught me here. And so they're using it not only in school during those 5 minutes, but they're taking that out and they have filled their toolbox up.
So can you describe an exercise? Because I'm curious, like for a 4 year old or even if it was a fourth grader. Like,
Manny's going
to
try it on her son.
Well, yeah, I'm interested. Like, yeah. What? Well, and for those who don't have this during school, how can parents teach their kids?
Yeah.
Well, one of the exercises that they do is breath work. They do what we call belly breathing. And that is that's a very common technique. There's a lot of science that surrounds breath work. Dr. Weil, who's an MD and a naturopath, he was kind of a forerunner of it. And we go in, Heather and I, who's my coworker, we actually go in and we train every single classroom. So we're the ones training, and we teach the children. We teach them the science, even the four-year-olds. We tell them about this big nerve that's in their belly that goes from their belly to their brain, and it sends a calming signal. And we have them practice, and we give the analogy of smelling a flower and blowing a bubble. And we walk them through all of that, and we talk about how you smell a flower and you don't just do a small sniff, you really breathe in. And then when you blow bubbles, you know, we talk about how you want to do a long exhale, because if you blow too hard and too fast, you know, what's going to happen to your bubble? And they all get that.
Mandy and I are doing a lot of breathing exercises here in the studio right now. Mandy's really trying hard to be mindful. She'll never be successful, but she's really trying very hard. Cheryl, how many schools, as we finish up, how many schools in Houston is Present Time Kids in now, or are you just right now in Travis?
We're just right now in Travis. I do a little bit of work in Harvard Elementary also. But Travis has implemented it. They were our pilot school, and we really kind of fleshed the program out with them. But it's implemented school-wide, and they do from kindergarten all the way to fifth grade with it.
I'd like to come out to Travis and just look and see what they're doing around this, right, Mandy?
They would welcome you. Like the kindergartners and the first graders, they have it in their daily. When you look at and on the wall, their schedule, it's written, like, you know, at 10:35, we do present time kids. The fourth graders have been doing it. The teachers were so gracious to have the University of Houston students come in and observe their classes for a month.
Wow.
And so, yeah. So
I love this stuff.
There's many teachers
that
would be open to that.
Yeah. Cheryl Hensley is the co-creator of Present Time Kids, doing great work in the schools. Cheryl, thanks so much for the work that you're doing. Thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be on.
Absolutely. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
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 You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT, Pacifica Radio. Mandy, how would that work in the office if we had like a moment of zen and we did this? I think it would actually...
I think some people do it individually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
because
we have a pretty astute staff, right?
We do.
I excluded.
Of course. Mm-hmm. But it's fast paced. There's a lot of demands, right? A lot of deadlines. And so, yeah, I think it would work.
Yeah. I think it'd be really good. Hey, you ready to do a little bit of social conscience scale?
You know it.
Yeah. Boom! So, thumbs up, thumbs down today. This is Mandy, is this your favorite segment or just mine?
I love it.
You love it?
Honestly, depends on the topic.
Yeah. And so today we've had this conversation about Alexa. Mm-hmm. And Alexa is, of course, what is this? Is it Amazon that does Alexa? Mm-hmm. And so Alexa is your little, Alexa, what time is it? Alexa, turn up the music. And
how long has Alexa been around?
I think maybe a year, right? You think longer than a year? So maybe a little bit longer than a year. But what we're finding and what we're hearing from many sources is this idea that kids are getting used to Alexa because their parents spend so much time paying attention to Alexa. Kids are now saying, Alexa, read a story. And they're beginning to almost treat Alexa as a surrogate parent. And we wonder, is that good or is that bad? And if you have a story about Alexa or if you think this is horrible and you want to comment on it, give us a call, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Alexa as a surrogate parent. Do you have Alexa in your home, Mandy?
I do.
You do?
Yes.
And so what does Alexa do for the kids right now?
Nothing really.
Does Alexa ever read a book?
No.
Does Alexa ever sing to the kids?
No. To be honest with you, I think Chris got it for me last Christmas.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was two Christmases ago.
Oh, really?
I can't remember. So it was exciting, like, oh, play this song. Kyler, my oldest, loved to ask questions. Alexa, when did Davy Crockett go to, wherever?
He only asked questions on the Alamo.
But there were all kinds of questions. Yeah. And then they were like, tell me a joke, whatever. But it didn't last for very long. I really don't use her, to be honest with you, at all.
You ever have a set of timer or anything?
No, but no. I mean, it's interesting. An alarm. She was the alarm for a little bit, but now I went back to my phone. So she's not utilized very much.
So have you heard of other parents using Alexa?
I've heard of other parents using Alexa. Sure.
Yeah.
And a lot. And I think kids, one of the things is they're asking you questions, and parents aren't giving them attention. So
ask Alexa. Alexa will answer your questions, kids.
Sure. Right? Yeah. And what I have heard, though, is when Alexa, this is what parents need to be careful of, when Alexa doesn't fully understand the child and thinks that the child is asking for something else, and that could be bad news.
Oh, what's an example of that?
I mean, it just could be. And we don't really need to go there.
Oh, okay.
I've had some friends. Yeah.
Oh,
inappropriate, right? It's not like, on the iPads and all of that, you block things so it doesn't come there. I don't think Alexa is blocked. Maybe you can. Clearly, these people didn't have theirs blocked. And so,
kid
didn't need to hear those things.
So, Mandy, thumbs up, thumbs down, Alexa as a surrogate parent.
Thumbs down.
Thumbs
down. Who's going to say thumbs up on this?
I don't know. Maybe it's
Bob,
helpful.
Bob, are you thumbs up or thumbs down?
I think it's thumbs down on this one. I don't even have an Alexa, but maybe that's just sort of a marking of my age.
Do you
want to
borrow mine?
Don, do you have an Alexa in your house? I'm wondering.
I don't trust any machine that can talk to me. I've seen too many movies, so I'm smarter than that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, I did read an article one time that there was, some kind of crime in a house, and the cops used Alexa to hear what was going on in the room.
Right.
Did you hear this?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were describing iRobot. But yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a scary thing, and I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah. There's that movie someone pointed out. It was a pretty good movie called Her.
I haven't seen
And it was about a man who falls in love with sort of a virtual girlfriend with artificial intelligence and girlfriend's fake, right?
Yeah.
And so much like Alexa, right, where there's only a voice.
Yeah.
And so it was a pretty good movie. But it's sort of interesting to me. I mean, I can see children sort of developing a relationship with a voice.
They don't understand.
Yeah.
What is going on?
Yeah,
or if it's just a voice, so it could be like your grandparent you're talking to on the phone, right?
Yeah.
You don't see every time.
I think, we're laughing a little bit about this today, but I bet you as early as a year from now, this will be a more serious thing that we're talking about.
Maybe to some extent. I also think it's just the future and people are using this kind of technology, and so we're going to have to figure out how to deal with it and put safeguards on it.
Very good. So we have three big thumbs
down.
Everyone
agreed with me.
Yeah. Marissa, producer Marissa, do you have a thumbs up, thumbs down on this one, Marissa?
I'm thumbs down. I agree with Mandy, what she said about, you're talking to your grandparents on the phone, and they're real people, so it can get confusing.
Yeah. Do you have an Alexa at your house, Marissa?
I don't. But yeah. I ask Siri questions every once in a while. Yeah.
Do you have, I'm wondering, I mean, you're like the youngest one around here, Marissa, because you're still sort of a teenager. I'm wondering, are young people sort of using, you know, Echo and Alexa and all of this very much?
Not anyone that I know, but yeah. It's a popular device. I mean, they keep making new ones, so someone is.
Yeah, very good. Well, there's our thumbs up, thumbs down for the day, right?
Extremely controversial.
But I think it's a deal,
yeah,
right?
It is
it's a deal. And it's interesting as we talk about these technology things and we laugh about it and then it sort of blows up, right? So yeah. It becomes much bigger down the road, right? I mean, we were talking, well, Mandy, when we started the show, we didn't know about screen time, but we were talking about screen time, right?
We were. Well, you kept saying TV in the room, and I think I'm the one like, TV's overrated. People don't really care about TVs that much.
Right. It's all about screen time.
It's all about
now.
The screens.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, very good. Hey, are you ready to talk to a little bit of Van Beck?
Always.
Wow, because I'm... Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. We just feel like we don't have the means. We got some good music for Van Beck, huh?
We do.
Very good. Scott, Dr. Scott Van Beck is with the Houston A-Plus Challenge. How you doing, man?
Bob.
Yes?
We've gone over this before. You know what my theme music is supposed to be.
But remind me, I'm sorry.
Alice Cooper,
Oh, yeah, School's Out.
School's Out.
Forever. Yeah.
Forever.
One day. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving, Scott?
Had a great Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Next year, your Thanksgiving's will be a lot colder than it is this year, huh, Scott?
That's right.
Because you'll be up in Vermont.
It's 25 degrees in Burlington, Vermont today. Wow.
Man, it's too cold.
Get ready.
I don't know how you're going to do it, man.
He doesn't know either.
So, Scott, I want to talk a little bit about public education. You being an expert, I mean, I know Mandy knows just a little bit more than you on this stuff, but I wanted to ask you, because you have so many years of experience on public education, I'm hearing that there's a real threat that the Texas Education Agency may indeed come into Houston and take over the district. You know, they've been threatening around Cashmere High School. Cashmere High School has been 8 years, has been underperforming. It's been on the list as an underperforming school. No school in the state of Texas has been that long on that list. And the state is not just going to come over and take Cashmere, but they're threatening to take over the district. What do you think is going to happen? And what do you think should happen, Scott?
Well, Bob, I can only think of one institution that is more ill-prepared to figure out teaching and learning than the independent school district. And you know what it is?
What's that? The TEA?
It's the state of Texas.
Which is hard. Well, this is interesting because so TEA came and said, hey, you need to present us a plan or we're coming in, right? Mm-hmm. And so my understanding is the conversation is they created a plan and TE said, no, I don't like that one. So you have one more chance, create a plan, or you can choose to shut down the school district. And I think there's several school board members who are saying, hey, I would be willing to give up my seat before we shut down the school. But I think the big fear also is, what if TEA comes in and takes over and then shuts down the school?
Yeah,
right?
That could happen. Scott,
yeah, did anybody from the district ask the state what their plan is?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I haven't heard the state's plan.
Nope. I don't think they're there
yet.
Yeah,
but I think that's a good line, though, right? But the state doesn't have to present a plan. I mean, they may have a secret plan. They don't have to present anything, right? They can come in if they feel like a district isn't doing well. They have the ability now. And this was a bipartisan piece of legislation that gave them this ability to just take over a district, right? To basically put democracy aside and say, well, obviously your school board members can't do the job, so we're going to do it for you.
But isn't that what most state legislatures do? They diagnose a problem without prescribing a solution.
Many times.
I mean, really, like over 30 years you know, in the state. The best that the state legislature has done, you know, around prescription is form a commission to study a problem.
So what I hope, if they do come in, right, if that's what happens and they do come in, I hope that they come in with resources, right? So we just don't want their brain and, oh, this is the plan. But could it possibly mean that they come in with additional resources that they didn't have before?
So, Scott, you and I have...
The problem with that, Mandy, they don't have resource.
Yeah. We'll see.
The state's broke.
Yeah. So, Scott, you and I have talked about turning around schools over the years many, many times. And let's say that they came in and they said, okay, we think Van Beck can do this. Van Beck, what would you do to turn around? It doesn't have to be Cashmere, but any school like Cashmere, of which we have a few in the Houston Independent School District and in other districts around the state. But what for you, what do you see as sort of the key to, and I know you like to sort of be revolutionary on this, go outside of the box, and what do you do for these schools?
Well, so now you're going to take me back to some of my comments at your education summit a couple weeks ago.
Only if you want to.
So I think the school is the wrong unit of change for a lot of these kids and a lot of the families. So the first thing I would do is I'd take everybody in Cashmere High School and take them out on the front lawn and basically ask the question to each learner, you know, what can we do for you? It may include Cashmere, it may not, that will lead to greater learning for you and greater support for your family. And then I would build my learning around those responses. If they want to stay in Cashmere, great. If they want to go to the Boys and Girls Club for 3 or 4 hours because they've got a mentor that they love to work with, I'd basically figure out how to get that done. If they want to go to a tutoring session with a math teacher or a math tutor that they really like, I'd figure out how to. You know, the problem is we're trying to solve the problems through a place called school instead of trying to solve the problems through something called the learner.
And when you do something like that, I mean, how do you, I guess the system is set up to make that not work, isn't it? Because if you are evaluating these kids, right, because the way we evaluate them is we test them. And you'd have to change that evaluation system as well if we did that, wouldn't you?
I think testing comes in time.
Yeah.
But some of these kids are so far behind, it's almost immoral. It's almost unethical to expect that they're going to do well on a test in 1 year's time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not against testing. I am against these annual tests and especially annual high stakes tests.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when a kid fails and then they fail and then they fail, guess what? They think they're a failure.
Yeah. We were talking earlier during Data Head that there's a school in Austin that had 41% mobility rate, and then the Communities and Schools program came, but then also the community, as we're saying with a capital C, got together to really change it. And the school is being threatened to close, right? They were threatening to close it. And then all of a sudden their mobility rate was down to 20% and grades were improving. Why do you think that it takes so long? Why do schools have to be threatened to be shut down for some of these communities really to come together and be innovative?
I don't know, because I think as a public, we tolerate a lot of mediocrity in our public education system. I mean, you know, really, like even our best schools, you know, those schools that, quote, meet standards, unquote, those kids are only getting 50 to 60% of the questions right on the test. So I think there's a big misconception. And honestly, I think the superintendents and the school boards are promoting that misconception, and that is our schools are fine. They're okay. You know, the only school that I hear that's broken, Cashmere High School.
When you think about superintendents, before we get to our Final Four, I'll make this our last question before the Final Four. When you think about superintendents, what should, you know, if superintendents are going to think outside of the box, Scott, what should they be doing? I mean, working within the system that we have, what can a superintendent do to sort of change the equation and be successful?
Yeah, so first, I think superintendents are trying to control too much. I think superintendents basically control three things. They can control the learner expectations, what we want to see in terms of learning for each kid. They control the resource. But I'm honestly kind of, you know, questioning that, you know, whether the superintendents are good stewards of the resource. I'm starting to think that educated families might be a better place to put dollars instead of, you know, the state, you know, to the district. And then the third thing is they're a support arm, and they make sure that nobody's cheating and everyone's doing the right thing.
Wow.
You know, beyond that, like, I think it is the learning leader, the adult, that are best qualified to take care of our children, whether they be part of the Houston Independent School District, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, communities and schools. Doesn't really matter. I'm agnostic to that these days.
Are you ready for a little Final Four with Scott Van Beck, Mandy?
We love the Final Four. All right.
Okay, let's give them a good education question.
So the first question for you, Scott, is who was your favorite teacher and why?
Oh, my favorite teacher, Margaret Russell. She's my fourth grade teacher.
Why was she your favorite, Scott?
She's the reason why I became a teacher.
Hmm.
Wow, wow. What did she do special for you?
Well, two things I remember. She played softball with us, and then 30 minutes later, she read House in the Woods. That was Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Laura House on the
so
Prairie.
She was multi-talented.
Little House on the Prairie.
She also taught us how to read, write, and do math.
Who was your Mandy? Who was your favorite teacher? Do you remember?
Oh, I liked Miss Weaver. She was fourth grade as well.
Yeah,
Miss Weaver was really good.
Yeah,
she was just really nice.
I had in fifth grade Miss Garfield. She was like the first one. I think I was the class pet. I'd never been the class pet before.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, I know. Right?
So. You're a class pet.
Yeah, just once. So can you believe that?
Okay.
Honestly, let's go to the second question.
What was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
I was a big swimmer when I was a kid, so you don't necessarily play with toys when you're in the water.
You like the water?
I'd probably say a basketball.
Basketball. He's a big basketball man.
I didn't know you were a big swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day. And what was your favorite book to read as a child?
Oh, I was just thinking about this book yesterday. It's called Great Heroes in Our History. And that's really why I became a history teacher.
Oh, really?
I read that book, and history just came alive.
How old were you?
Maybe 8.
Oh, wow. I'll have to look at that. What was it? Great Heroes of History?
Yeah, great heroes, great stories, something like that. Next time I'm in the office or at the radio station, I'll bring it along so you can see it.
Okay.
And Final Four question for you. What was your favorite movie when you were a kid, Scott Van Beck?
Favorite movie. Well, I think it seemed to be The Wizard of Oz. But, you know, early in my years, the first time that I'd see the Wicked Witch of the West, I had to turn the TV off. I couldn't take her.
Too much.
But I had a growth mindset, so I kind of, like, worked through that.
Yeah. And it's still a good movie. Scott Van Beck is the executive director at the Houston A Plus Challenge. Hey, Scott, thanks so much for all that you do, and thanks for giving us your thoughts on education today.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
All right,
bye bye. Very good. So Scott is always good on education, huh?
He is.
He's a little too thoughtful sometimes, right? Like, those pauses drive me crazy on the radio.
He's a thoughtful thinker.
Yeah, yeah.
He's mindful.
He is mindful.
I've just looked up Heroes of History.
So, okay. Mandy, next Monday, you and I are going to be in Austin, right? Because we're testifying. We're doing a whole presentation to the legislative staff on Hurricane Harvey and its impact on children.
That's right.
Here in the Houston area.
With some great partners.
And so if people want to visit the Growing Up in America Facebook page, and if you have thoughts about the Hurricane Harvey and your thoughts that you'd like us to incorporate in some of the stuff that we talk about, please let us know, because we'd be happy to talk about that. It's amazing. And we're going to be bringing lots of people from Avenue CDC, talking about housing.
We'll be talking about housing, Houston Food Bank, food.
It's going to be there. Mental Health America, talking about some of the mental health issues, tremendous issues going on right now.
That's right. Collaborative for Children, child care
issues.
Save the Children.
Save the Children, who've come to our city and have done just a bang-up job, right, in terms of helping us deal with a lot of the kids that were without homes and in some of the shelters.
That's right. So it'll be a good conversation. And it's a great opportunity for legislative staff to have some one-on-one with people with boots on the ground and ask their questions. So
yeah,
should be good.
So we'll be there. So we'll probably have a couple other staff from Children at Risk sitting in the chairs as we do this. But I think it'd be good. We could probably call in, though, and give a little report, Mandy.
We might be on the road.
Yeah, we might be on the road coming back about that time. So we should do that. Marissa, we could probably schedule something like that in. Hey, so in our final 45 seconds here, I want to thank Don, on our engineer.
Yeah, Don.
Thank you for all you're doing, man. And I want to thank Marissa Johnston, Marissa the Khaleesi Johnston. She does a great job. And Jane, Purple Polka Dot Bikini, continues to work really hard at making sure our podcasts are up to date. And you can go to iTunes if you want to get the podcast, if you're missing some of our shows. They're always there. And listen, as a community, we want to make sure that you are taking care of kids. Hug your kids. Hug all of our kids. Make sure that every single child here in the Houston area, here across the state of Texas and nationally, has that opportunity to be successful. And thank you so much for all that you do. And we do it for children, right, Mandy?
For children.
For children. Hey, we'll see you next time here on Pacifica Radio.
We want to thank you, the listeners, and those who contributed to our successful fall fund drive. This is Interim General Manager Larry Winters asking you to please consider a year-end tax-deductible donation to your favorite Pacifica Foundation station, KPFT. This can be done in several different ways. You can call our business department at extension 314 at 713-526-4000 during business hours, or go to kpft.org, or go to kpftfacebook.com/kpfthouston. Then click on the donate button, and don't forget, you're listening to KPFT 90.1 in Houston.
Like Bonnie and Clyde, Johnny and June, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. One foot in the grave, one foot up on the gas. There's mountains to climb, giants to slay, lessons to learn, prayers to pray, and there ain't no time for living in the past.
Outsmart is an award-winning monthly publication that has delivered local and national news to Houston's LGBT audience for over two decades. The magazine is published online and can be found at www.outsmartmagazine.com. Also available in print edition. Search for one of the magazine's 375-plus distribution locations around the greater Houston area. Outsmart Magazine's featured content includes news, columns, arts and entertainment, a lifestyle section, bar and club guides, and more. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. Pacifica Radio for Peace. Tune in worldwide at kpft.org. Half of the U.S.'s teachers will be eligible to retire over the next decade. Filling their shoes will be challenging, since 9 of 10 top-tier students don't view teaching as a desirable profession. While the urgent need to fill teaching positions does create a labor crisis, it also presents an opportunity to transform K-12 education in America by recruiting our nation's brightest students to the profession. If you ever wanted to be a teacher, the time is now. Amazing things are happening in teaching today. Find out more at teach.org.
90.1 KPFT Houston. ¶¶